Here's a look at our headlines this hour. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says all illegal sanctions against Iran that are in breach of the 2015 deal must be removed. Britain's economy is showing signs of a stalling as the highest inflation in 40 years affects consumers' confidence. And Lebanese lawmakers are consulting with President Michelon to nominate a new prime minister for the crisis at country. Hello and welcome from the Iranian capital, Tehran. It's good to have you with us. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran and Moscow are working on an agreement for long-term comprehensive cooperation.
We also discussed the treaty for comprehensive strategic and long-term cooperation between the two states. And this has been on our agenda prior to the trip by President Raisi to Russia. We hope to hold experts meeting very soon in order to finalize the contents of the agreement and also other matters on the agenda. We came up with very good agreements.
Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a joint press conference with his Russian counterpart, Sergei Lavrov, in Tehran. He said the two countries are looking to expand bilateral trade and boost cooperation in various sectors, including railway transit. The top Iranian diplomat also commented on the war in Ukraine, saying the U.S. is using NATO to implement its agenda. The minister said Tehran believes a diplomatic approach is the only way to resolve the conflict. On the JCPOA revival talks, he said Tehran hopes the U.S. will take a realistic approach and remove the sanctions to pave the way for a final agreement on reviving the 2015 Iran deal. Lavrov, for his part, said Moscow fully supports the restoration of the JCPOA without any unacceptable additions.
We once again confirm to our Iranian friends that we will fully support their position about the revival of Iran's 2015 nuclear deal with no exceptions and unacceptable additions. This implies cancellation of all the illegal sanctions.
Lavrov said all illegal anti-Iran sanctions that contradict the JCPOA must be lifted. The Russian top diplomat said Moscow and Tehran condemned what he called unacceptable practice of illegal unilateral sanctions imposed by the U.S. and its allies. He said the two states are working to counter such measures. He said Moscow and Tehran both reject the concept of the so-called rule-based order prompted by Western powers. The numerous acts of sabotage that Israel has committed against Iran, from assassinating its nuclear scientists to damaging its nuclear facilities, are an open secret. But Iran says Israel's covert operations have weakened in the face of its security apparatus. The judiciary has revealed the arrest of three Mossad-linked agents who had the intent of killing Iranian nuclear scientists.
Iran has released fresh details about the covert and planned operations of agents of Israeli spy agency in Iran. Officials say the three agents detained back in April were planning to assassinate Iranian nuclear scientists. Officials say the agents were arrested following a complicated intelligence operation that lasted 8 months. Judiciary officials say some members of the cell have been arrested in Iran's southeastern Sistan and Balochistan province, while other members and operatives have been detained outside the province by Iran's intelligence forces. Officials say the case is under preliminary investigation and that an indictment would be filed and sent to court soon. This is not the first time Iran busts Mossad-linked terrorists. In July last year, Iran's intelligence ministry arrested a network of agents with the Israeli Mossad spy agency at the western borders, confiscating a large cache of weapons and ammunition that they were planning to use to provoke riots and terror inside the country.
Well, of course there should be, and I don't think anyone is really going to seriously say it's unthinkable that Israel would try to assassinate Iranian figures, whether in science or politics. They've got a demonstrable propensity to do so, and they boast about it.
The arrests come amid open threats by Israeli officials against Iranian nuclear scientists and facilities. The regime is notorious for its sabotage activities and assassinations in Iran.
And the reason behind its stepped-up hostility toward Iran and a very open hostility is that Israel seeks to be the lone superpower, or you could say mini superpower of the region, as a junior partner of the big superpower, the United States.
Israel has been trying to halt Iran's civilian nuclear program throughout the years, but it's been unsuccessful. Those efforts include influencing the IAEA reports by providing the agency with false information about Iran's nuclear activities. Still, the failure of the international community in holding Israel to account has emboldened the regime to pursue its plots for assassination and sabotage.
Israel has tried various ways to stop Iran's nuclear progress. They include acts of sabotage, assassinating Iranian nuclear scientists, as well as threats to bomb Iran's nuclear installations. Probably the most high-profile assassination was the killing of Mohsen Fakhrizadeh, a top Iranian nuclear scientist who was brutally murdered by Mossad agents in 2020. Mossad was involved in an explosion that hit Iran's Natanz nuclear facility in 2021. Israel was also the main regional force that pushed the United States to exert economic and diplomatic pressure on Iran. The policy culminated in the so-called maximum pressure campaign of former President Donald Trump. But none of those policies reached their stated goals. Iran's economy did not collapse, and its nuclear program has accelerated massively after the U.S. quit the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, in 2018.
It's the whole establishment, the whole Israeli establishment, that has this extreme hostility toward Iran and wants to continue to take action in the hopes of provoking something greater. It carries out assassinations, there's no question about that. It carries out bombings inside the country, carried out by covert agents. I think right now the United States government is not wishing to see an escalation into a full-blown war. And Israel does, in the final analysis, have to pay attention to what Washington thinks and says.
Just recently, a top U.S. think tank admitted to Israel's failure towards Iran. A report by Atlantic Council said that Israel's policy has failed to stop Iran. The article said the Tel Aviv regime needs to recalculate and adopt a strategy that corresponds to the current state of the Iranian nuclear program. Given the current state of affairs, the United States, which is Israel's staunch ally, needs to reconsider its unilateral support for Israel.
The spokesman for the UN Secretary General has warned about the situation of Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip, and the warning has been welcomed by the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas. Hamas spokesman Fawzi Barhoum says Stephane Dujarric's comments have put the spotlight on the suffering of the Palestinians in Gaza. He says the international community needs to pressure Israel into lifting the siege. Barhoum says the blockade constitutes a blatant violation of international law. On Monday, the UN official underscored the devastating impacts of the Gaza siege on the people there. He said about 80% of the Gaza population need humanitarian aid. He also said Israel's closure of crossings into Gaza must end in line with a UN Security Council resolution. Iraqi parliament has sworn in new lawmakers to replace a bloc loyal to Shia cleric Muqtada al-Sadr. 64 new members of parliament were sworn in, and 9 seats remain vacant in the assembly. This after the bloc of 73 Sadrist parliamentarians resigned en masse 2 weeks ago after months of stalemate over forming a new government. On Wednesday, Sadr dismissed allegations that Iran was interfering in Iraq's internal affairs, saying the Islamic Republic did not exert any pressure on any Shia party. An industry watchdog survey reveals Britain's economy is showing signs of stalling as high inflation threatens a recession in the United Kingdom. The S&P Global's Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI, shows UK firms have been hit by a slowdown in new orders. Moreover, business confidence has fallen to its weakest since last year. In addition, UK private sector firms say demand has been hit by purchase hesitancy and squeezed budgets due to high inflation. June's PMI figures didn't change, showing the slowest economic growth rate in a year. Meanwhile, Britons are paying higher living costs and fuel prices as national inflation climbs to 9.1%. That's the highest it has been in the past 40 years. Lebanon's caretaker Prime Minister Najib Mikati has been designated to form a new cabinet after the country's lawmakers consulted with President Aoun. To get more details about the matter, we earlier reached out to our Beirut-based correspondent, Maryam Saleh. Here's more.
We have just heard the statement from the Secretary General of the President of the Presidential Palace, who has declared that Mr. Najib Mikati has taken the highest number of votes. So Prime Minister Mikati has been designated as Prime Minister with 54 votes, if you may say, from the lawmakers of the Lebanese Parliament. Now, this is the first time that we have that slight majority. Before, there was always consensus, usually. The last time he was named as Prime Minister, he got 72 votes. Now what we do have is we have a lot of independent newcomers into the parliament. We also have groups who say they don't believe that Prime Minister Mikati can get Lebanon out of this crisis, despite the fact that his cabinet has already made their contracts and their agreements with the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, and they have also vows from the international community that they will be bailed out, that Lebanon will be bailed out as a crisis. But what he's trying to get is around $3 billion in assistance and funds, while Lebanon has, of course, a debt of over $70 billion. Now, this is, something that is a very important threshold for Lebanon, because we only have several months until the end of the term of President Michel Aoun, after which also the cabinet will have been resigned. And as you know, as the executive body of the country, they are the ones who have to do the hard work here in this country.
Rescuers are racing against time to pull survivors from the rubble the day after a powerful earthquake ripped through the mountainous border region in eastern Afghanistan. Heavy rains, rockfalls, and inaccessible terrain are slowing down the operations. Some 1,000 people have lost their lives, and officials are expecting the death toll to rise. People are digging a large number of graves to bury the dead, mainly in Paktika province that has been hit the hardest. At least 1,500 others have been injured. A number of countries have offered emergency aid. Two humanitarian flights from neighboring Iran have already landed in Afghanistan. The UN says it's deploying health teams and supplies of medicine, food, and emergency shelter to the quake zone. China's President Xi Jinping has called on the leaders of BRICS countries to rise to their responsibilities and stand up against abuse of international sanctions. Addressing an online meeting of the bloc, the Chinese leader said the BRICS nations should abandon group confrontation and oppose unilateral sanctions. He said the bloc must act to inject positive, stable, constructive forces into the world. Speaking in the same online forum, President Putin of Russia called on the bloc to cooperate in the face of, quote, selfish actions from the West. He said Moscow was ready to further develop cooperation with the bloc. The BRICS countries comprise Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. A European rights group has published a report on the rise of Islamophobia in Germany, home to nearly 5 million Muslims. The report by Fear International says there have been more than 800 attacks on mosques over the past 8 years, most of which are not properly investigated and the perpetrators not identified. Said Furuza has a report from London.
Germany, home to the second biggest Muslim community in Western Europe after France. It's also home to a growing number of racist attacks on Muslims by neo-Nazis and far-right extremists. Rights group FAIR International, which has founded Germany's first reporting center for attacks on mosques, has recorded nearly 840 such incidents since 2014. A case in point, the horrifying 2014 arson attack that gutted Berlin's Mevlana Mosque. German police are usually quick to show up on the scene, but in most cases, FAIR International says, the crimes are not properly investigated.
Just 10% they find the people who have done it. So 90% and they knew maybe who has done it. And that shows that even the government, the police, and some people of the government are together with them.
The attacks are not limited to Muslim places of worship. Physical assaults on Muslim men and women are also an almost daily occurrence.
A 2019 study found that more than half of Germans view Islam as a threat. In the same year, nearly 1,000 incidents were reported against Muslims and institutions. And in 2020, at least one Muslim individual or mosque was either physically assaulted or received death threats almost every day.
Another report published in 2020 criticizes many European states for failing to report on anti-Muslim incidents as a separate category of hate crime.
This plan is against Islam. Everything is planned. And in Germany, the fruits, because of our history, of course, we do have people who are racist. I don't know how much percent. And that is in whole Europe.
Despite all the warnings and criticism, anti-Muslim hatred, fueled by the propaganda of neo-Nazi groups and the far-right opposition parties, has only grown, a reality that does not bode well for the country's nearly 5 million Muslims. Saeed Puriza, London.
And with that, we'll come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
This is IRIB English Radio. IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment. In the limelight.
Colombia has been liberated by its voters at the presidential polls, where the people rejected the U.S.-sponsored candidate, Rodolfo Hernandez, in the recent runoff referendum, where Gustavo Petro emerged as the new head of state. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Kayhan, international staff writer. This article is published under the heading New Times Insight for Colombia. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. The winds of change blowing across Latin America have freed yet another country in a democratic manner from the tyrannical tentacles of the U.S. Colombia has been liberated by its voters at the presidential polls, where the people rejected the U.S.-sponsored candidate Rodolfo Hernandez in the recent runoff referendum, where Gustavo Petro emerged as the new head of state. The 62-year-old former guerrilla leader, who during the presidential campaign had promised to transform the country into a social model for the betterment of all sections of the Colombian people by throwing off the capitalist yoke, has been given the mandate to form a broad-based national government. Petro had also vowed to re-establish relations with Venezuela if elected, and his promise of reforms includes taxing of big landowners, ending the awarding of oil exploration licenses, and revival of diplomatic ties with the government of neighboring Venezuela. The U.S. is in a state of shock, but obviously cannot do anything except for its criminal habit of resorting to economic terrorism through imposing sanctions or political subversion by instigating the military to launch a coup. Analysts, however, point out that these stale policies of Washington have failed miserably in several Latin American countries and have no chance of succeeding against a person who managed to garner the most votes in the history of Colombia. In addition, Petro's record of success during his tenure last decade as the elected mayor of Bogota, who in 2013 had received the Worldwide Climate and City Leadership Award because of his metropolitan achievements based on protection of the fragile natural environment, is widely acclaimed by all sections of the people. To the frustration of the U.S., Petro is now all set to focus on his election promise of pursuing a climate-friendly policy by reducing greenhouse gas emissions through end of fossil fuel exploration in Colombia. Petro has pledged to raise taxes on the wealthiest 4,000 Colombians and said that neoliberalism would ultimately destroy the country. His election victory has been hailed by the Colombian masses, ready to protect their homeland from American meddling, especially after the second independence of Colombia, which in 1810 had fought and defeated Spanish colonialism. President Nicolas Maduro of Venezuela, in his congratulatory cable to Petro, has rightly remarked, "The will of the Colombian people, who came out to shield the pathway of democracy and peace, was quite spectacular." New times are thus in sight for Colombia.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladheena amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now we invite you to listen to a speech by Sheikh Hamza Sodagian.
Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala gives us some laws in Surah Al-Fajr. But because our personal experience doesn't involve seeing these in real life, in the Quran it's just Alam tara kayfa fa'ala rabbuka bi'ad. Did you not see what your God or how your God did towards, your Lord did towards Ad? Iram dhatil imad. Iram, the city, dhatil imad. They had these huge pillars that they had created. Allati lam yukhlaq mithluha fil bilad. That hadn't been created up to that point in the cities and the civilizations. That was a huge civilization, architecture that is unimaginable for people around them up to that point, of course. Now you have greater structures. That's why it says لم يخلق. At that time, it wasn't created before or anything greater than that. And also Thamud, it's just a couple of lines. It says something and it moves on. We read that, we haven't experienced it, it doesn't really click. We got to look at this and try to understand some of the words, the sentences, and realize how great this whole thing is. It's not a simple matter. That's why the Quran says read over and over. Read and ponder, reflect, pause a little bit. See what is being said here. Personal lesson from this for each and every one of us as individuals that we can take. That is, look, this is the law of the universe. And every time you forget, look at these ruins and remind yourself. Remember, the Quran tells us many times. In this chapter here, it doesn't say go and look at what happened to people prior to you, people who lived the earth and what they did. And it doesn't say that here in this chapter. Other chapters say that. But here it mentions these examples. Look at these ruins. Remind yourselves of it. Sometimes you may know, God may have mentioned them, sometimes you don't. The Aztec Empire. You see ruins in Mexico of these, whatever empire it was, whatever great civilization at the time, they, being able to put those structures together, there's a lot of work that they did. It was a whole civilization that was able to build something like that. They're gone though. Whatever happened, that civilization died even before the Europeans came. This is God's system, all right? Well, personally, we look at it, okay, I got to be careful. If I'm going to be rebelling against Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْصَادِ. Anyone, you think you're so intelligent, you can cheat everybody, إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْصَادِ. Nobody else can see, but He is in charge. And if you're doing whatever the hell you want, doesn't mean that God is not in charge and doesn't mean that God is not watching you. If you're going to keep going worse and worse, that's fine. إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْصَادِ. This is a point, even if He gives you the full 100 years, which usually we don't. As George Bush Sr., Mal'oon, lived very long, you know, from what I remember of the number of years he got. And he lived, it seemed like a normal person all the way to the end. Well, even that's the apparent side of it. There's a time. إِنَّ رَبَّكَ لَبِالْمِرْصَادِ. Always remember. Then there's another aspect of this that has to do with civilization. Be careful what civilization you want to be part of. Who you want to align yourself with. You want to align yourself with the pharaohs. You want to be part of the Fir'auni system. You should know when the Fir'auni system goes down, you're going to go down with it. That's just how it works. There were people from Banu Israel that didn't choose to go with Musa. What happened to them? They went down with the Fir'auni system. Musa came and said, "This is the path. Come with me." A lot of them, maybe most of them, joined Musa. Not all of them. Some of them helped the Fir'aun. Qarun was with Fir'aun. The other worshipper, Bal'am, this guy was someone that was seen as a great worshipper, but he joined the Fir'aun. And what happens? He went down. The Quran mentions him specifically, not by name. The Quran says, look at the person, give them the example, the parable of the person. أَتَيْنَاهُ آيَاتِنَا فَانْسَلَخَ مِنْهَا. We gave him our signs. That's not a small thing. فَانْسَلَخَ مِنْهَا. He removed himself from those signs. Which civilization do we want to be with? Do you want to be with Musa of the time? Or do you want to be with the Fir'auns of the time? You want to suck up to the Fir'auns? So they're in power. Remember, these are Tughat. There are people that think We need to become part of the administration in this country. Join the Congress. Join whatever these parties, these two parties, the Democratic Party, the Republican Party. And it's amazing how they call themselves Shia and Muslim, and they look at you in the face and they say it with a straight face, like, brother, sister, I don't know what you're reading. I think you have a different Quran. I don't know which revelation you're reading. This is what God says here. فَأَكْثَرُ فِيهَا الْفَسَادِ. Is there any, these country or these civilizations, Ad and Thamud, their corruption on the earth is nothing compared to the British corruption, compared to the French corruption, compared to the German corruption, compared to the Spanish corruption, compared to the Portuguese corruption, and most of all, compared to the American corruption. In terms of lives taken of innocent people, Korea is one example, Vietnam is another example, Iraq is another example, Cuba is another example, South America generally is a huge example, the Philippines another example, Indonesia, Malaysia, their own example, what they've done there. Just life, human life, which is a huge thing. Corrupting people's ideologies. Look at what Hollywood is doing up to today. The whole world is being influenced by this garbage. This is corruption. فَأَكْثَرُوا فِيهَا الْفَسَادِ. Family structures being destroyed. Marriage is no longer even something that has to do with male, female, or what male, female. Now in Europe, maharim, al-ayadu billah, mother, son, doesn't matter, whatever. And they're selling this to the world. This is advancement. This is enlightenment. That's how much they're on weed, man. That's what's happening. They're hallucinating here. That's not light, bro. Wake up. That's darkness. It's in your head. That's a problem. These are the realities of the universe.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Azim عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
In the limelight.
In the U.S., the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack directly tied Donald J. Trump on Tuesday, 21st of June, to a scheme to put forward fake slates of pro-Trump electors and presented fresh details on how the former president sought to bully, cajole, and bluff his way into invalidating his 2020 defeat in states around the country. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Luke Broadwater and Alan Feuer. The piece is titled, Panel Ties Trump to Fake Electoral Plan, Mapping His Attack on Democracy. In the U.S., the House Committee investigating the January 6th attack directly tied Donald J. Trump on Tuesday, 21st of June, to a scheme to put forward fake slates of pro-Trump electors and presented fresh details on how the former president sought to bully, cajole, and bluff his way into invalidating his 2020 defeat in states around the country. Using sworn in-person testimony from Republicans and videotaped depositions from other officials, the House panel showed how the former president and a group of his allies laid siege to state lawmakers and election officials after the balloting in a wide-ranging plot to reverse the outcome of the election. The campaign led to harassment and threats of violence against anyone who resisted. The hearing on Tuesday, 21st of June, amounted to the most comprehensive picture to date of a president who directed an attack on democracy itself and repeatedly reached into its essential machinery, the administration of free and fair elections. It was the committee's fourth hearing, and it captured how, long before a throng of his supporters stormed the Capitol on 6th of January 2021, Donald Trump used election lies to whip up violence against anyone who dared deny his false claims of victory. The president's lie was and is a dangerous cancer on the body politic, said Representative Adam Schiff, the California Democrat who led the questioning on Tuesday. If you can convince Americans they cannot trust their own elections, that any time they lose is somehow illegitimate, then what is left but violence to determine who should govern? Over nearly 3 hours, the House committee demonstrated how Donald Trump and his supporters, including his personal lawyer, Rudolph Giuliani, and his chief of staff, Mark Meadows, sought to persuade state officials to avoid certifying vote counts to give Donald Trump a victory in the Electoral College. Donald Trump also sought to persuade lawmakers to create the slates of alternate electors, hoping that Vice President Mike Pence might use them to subvert the normal democratic process when he oversaw the official count of electoral votes on 6th of January 2021, and the panel presented evidence tying Representative Andy Biggs of Arizona and Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin to the plan. The House Committee offered testimony from four public servants who stood up to the former president, rejecting his increasingly desperate pleas for help, often at great personal expense. "I didn't want to be used as a pawn," Rusty Bowers, the Speaker of the Arizona House of Representatives, testified. Rusty Bowers, a Republican, told the committee that he rebuffed Donald Trump's attempts to get him to create slates of pro-Trump electors in his state, Arizona, explaining to the former president, "You are asking me to do something against my oath, and I will not break my oath." Such defiance, however, came at a cost. Rusty Bowers told the committee that after bucking Donald Trump, a truck was driven through his neighborhood, playing a recording that declared him to be a pedophile. Mr. Bowers, who spoke about the Constitution in reverential and spiritual terms, had tears in his eyes as he described his gravely ill daughter enduring some of the harassment outside their house. Her daughter died last year. In similar fashion, Brad Raffensperger, Georgia Secretary of State, testified that after he turned down Donald Trump's request in a phone call to find the votes that would throw him the election, his wife of 40 years received threats by text and people broke into their daughter-in-law's house. "It's turned my life upside down." Wandria Moss, a Georgia election worker who was implicated by name in one of Donald Trump's false election fraud allegations, said in her own emotional testimony. Wandria Moss, who is known as Shay, added, "It's affected my life in a major way, in every way, all because of lies." And a panel contrasted the willingness of the four officials to speak out with the refusal of many of Donald Trump's allies and others around him to tell investigators what they know. In particular, Representative Liz Cheney, a Republican of Wyoming, and the panel's vice chairwoman, singled out Pat Cipollone, Donald Trump's White House counsel, who repeatedly pushed back on his efforts to overturn the election. "Our committee is certain that Donald Trump does not want Mr. Cipollone to testify here," Liz Cheney said. "But we think the American people deserve to hear from Mr. Cipollone personally. He should appear before this House committee, and we're working to secure his testimony." The plan to enlist the help of state lawmakers to create fake slates of electors appears to have begun just days after the election, when a pro-Trump lawyer, Cleta Mitchell, sent an email suggesting the idea to John Eastman, another lawyer close to Donald Trump. "A movement is stirring," Ms. Mitchell wrote in the email, introduced as evidence at the hearing, "but needs constitutional support." By 18th of November 2020, the committee said another pro-Trump lawyer, Kenneth Chesbrough, had joined the effort, writing a memo suggesting that the Trump campaign should organize its allies in several swing states to draft fake slates of electors. Around Thanksgiving, still others signed onto the plan, including Rudolph Giuliani and Mark Meadows, according to a recorded deposition from Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to Mark Meadows. Eventually, the Republican National Committee, the RNC, was brought in as well. Ronna McDaniel, the group's chairwoman, said in a recorded deposition played at the hearing. Ronna McDaniel testified that during a call with Donald Trump, he put John Eastman on the phone with her to talk about the importance of the Republican National Committee helping the campaign gather these contingent electors. All of this was allowed to go forward despite the fact that several lawyers for the Trump campaign felt it was illegal. The White House counsel's office said as much during a meeting with Mark Meadows and Rudolph Giuliani, according to Ms. Hutchinson. And even those pushing the scheme conceded it was groundless. "We've got lots of theories," Rusty Boas recalled Mr. Giuliani saying at a meeting with Arizona legislators. "We just don't have the evidence." On another occasion, as Rusty Boas questioned John Eastman about how there could possibly be a legal way for him to simply name new electors, the lawyer had no answer, replying, "Just do it and let the courts work it out." Even after Arizona had certified its electors, John Eastman and Andy Biggs called Rusty Boas, pushing him to launch a fresh attempt to decertify the vote after the fact. Brad Raffensperger and Gabrielle Sterling, Georgia's top two election officials, recounted a similar story. Pressure from Donald Trump to overturn the election that ultimately led to threats and intimidation when they pushed back. Mr. Raffensperger was on a call with Donald Trump on 3rd of January 2021, during which Donald Trump pushed him to find enough votes to overturn the outcome of the election and vaguely threatened him with a criminal offense. Gabrielle Sterling is perhaps best known for having given an impassioned speech on 1st of December 2020 in which she addressed Donald Trump directly, telling him that his lies about the election were leading to violence against election workers. "It has all gone too far, all of it," Gabrielle Sterling said in a speech that was played at the hearing. He added, "It has to stop. Mr. President, you have not condemned these actions or this language." Shortly after the election, Donald Trump and his allies seized on conspiracy theories, falsely claiming that election workers in Atlanta, Georgia, had been caught on video quietly taking thousands of ballots from a suitcase and feeding them into counting machines. Even though the allegations were quickly investigated and debunked, Gabrielle Sterling said, Donald Trump and his lawyers continued to push the claims in public and on social media sites. Fighting back against this flood of misinformation, Gabrielle Sterling says, was like a shovel trying to empty the ocean. The committee showed the breathtaking sweep of the pressure campaign across seven states, playing clips from officials in Michigan and Pennsylvania who were inundated with thousands of text messages, phone calls, protesters near their homes and threats. At one point, Brian Cutler, the Republican House Speaker in Pennsylvania, asked Donald Trump's legal team to stop its daily phone calls to him because they were inappropriate. The plan found eager allies in Congress, however. The committee showed texts that an aide to Ron Johnson had sent to an aide to Mike Pence, indicating that Mr. Johnson wanted to hand-deliver a slate of fake electors from Wisconsin to the vice president on 6th of January. Mike Pence's aide responded, "Do not give that to him." A spokesman for Ron Johnson on Tuesday blamed the exchange on his chief of staff, saying that the senator had no involvement in creating an alternate set of electors. The hearing ended with testimony from Ms. Moss, an election worker who processed votes with her mother, Ruby Freeman, in Atlanta, Georgia, on Election Day. In early December, Rudolph Giuliani appeared at a state legislative hearing in Georgia and falsely accused her and her mother of taking ballots from a suitcase and illegally running them through voting machines. Mr. Giuliani's baseless allegations were amplified by right-wing media outlets and by Donald Trump himself, who mentioned Ms. Moss's name several times during his call with Brad Raffensperger. After the accusations went viral, Ms. Moss was subjected to racist threats by phone and text and became afraid to leave her home. She told the committee that her mother fled her home after the FBI warned her that she could be in danger. Ms. Moss also recalled a panicked phone call from her septuagenarian grandmother, who said people had arrived at her home seeking to make a citizen's arrest of Ms. Moss.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
A major benefit brought by Imam Khomeini was familiarizing people with the concept of resistance. This is the part of the speech delivered on June 4th, 2022 by Imam Khomeini, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. On the 33rd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini, greetings be upon him. All praise is due to God, the Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master and Prophet, Abul Qasim al-Mustafa Muhammad, and upon his pure, immaculate, and chosen household, those who guide the guided and who are infallible, especially the one remaining with God on earth. First, I wish to send my greetings to the honorable participants and dear brothers and sisters who have taken part in this glorious gathering. I hope that you will be successful, God willing. I have missed Imam and this warm gathering that used to be formed annually at the Holy Shrine of Imam Khomeini. I thank God that this year, too, this warm and significant gathering has been formed. Our magnanimous Imam is the soul of the Islamic Republic. If this soul is taken away from the Islamic Republic, and if it is disregarded, there will only remain a pale mark of the Islamic Republic on the wall.
اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
My discussion today is about certain aspects of the personality of our dear and magnanimous Imam. Of course, others and I have spoken about aspects of Imam's personality over the years, but there are many things that are left unsaid in this regard. No matter how much I speak of my love, when I come to her, I feel ashamed. From a poem by Rumi. Many aspects of our magnanimous Imam's personality remain unknown. In fact, the current generation of the revolution, in particular, our young generation, do not correctly know Imam and his greatness. They compare Imam to people like me, while the difference is very large and astronomical. Imam was an exceptional personality in the true sense of the word. Having a correct understanding of Imam is significant for the young generation because it will help them manage the future of the country in an efficient way. Imam was not only Imam for the past, he is also an Imam for the present and the future. Our young and intelligent generation, which is going to undertake the national and revolutionary duty to take the second step of the revolution, and manage the future of the country, needs a real software.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Fridays.